Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Hollywood Crime Scene. This is Rachel Fisher.
Hi, this is Desi Jadakin.
And this is part two of three parts, I've decided.
Yeah. You got chocolate on your chin.
Desi, save it for the after show.
Okay, sorry.
This is part two of Hollywood Fixers.
Yeah, we're waiting.
You know what? I was very happy that there were lots of happy listeners.
Yeah.
Because this is a juicy story.
They should be happy.
So my main source for this book is The Fixers by E.J. Fleming. And I also use some old newspaper articles as well, which I will mention when we get there. Let's get started. As we discussed in last week's episode, Eddie Mannix was not a faithful man. Mm. He had several girls on the side, one of whom was actress Mary Nolan.
Okay.
Now, Mary Nolan had a really wild life. We got to do an episode on her.
Okay.
Because she had all sorts of like weird legal problems in her later life.
Okay.
So his affair with Mary Nolan went on for 4 years between 1927 and 1931. In 1935, Nolan sued Mannix for $500,000, claiming physical abuse.
Whoa.
Now, during the course of their relationship, she underwent 15 abdominal surgeries as the result of his abuse.
Holy shit.
Yeah, he was a bad man. A July 1935 issue of the LA Times reported that the suit charged Mannix with beating her, as well as using his influence in Hollywood to prevent her from getting work.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, this scandal, I guess, if you want to call it that, at the time,
yeah.
I mean, this was like barely a blip, but that's crazy that
this
guy just continued to work in Hollywood for like 20 more years.
He fixed himself
and the studio fixed him.
Yeah.
So this is in the paper that she's suing him for this horrific physical abuse, as well as using his influence to cover it up and prevent her from getting work afterwards.
Right.
The suit claimed that one night in 1931, Nolan woke to Mannix beating her in her bed. She was then taken to a hospital while she was unconscious. And then that same night, she had emergency surgery. While in her hospital bed, Mannix then beat her up again.
Oh my God.
Causing her to undergo several more surgeries. These instances were among the several occasions in which Nolan said Mannix beat her. Then, Nolan said, in the spring of 1931, Mannix used his influence to cancel her appearance in a play in Philadelphia. Nolan claimed that Mannix orchestrated a boycott against her and that she had been unable to find work. Mannix, of course, denied the claims, and Howard Strickling got to work smearing Mary Nolan.
Damn.
So because of all of his connections in the press, he was able to, like, plant stories about her.
Right.
And, like, whether they were true or not, this was a full smear campaign to make her look like an unsympathetic witness.
So smearing her and then covering up his stuff.
Yes.
At the same time.
Exactly. So stories were leaked to the press about how she was sexually promiscuous and how she had had abortions. Mannix had apparently paid for all of these abortions. By this time, Mary Nolan had become addicted to morphine, and so a private detective was sent to her house to threaten her that unless she dropped the suit, she was going to face drug charges. And it's thought that she became addicted to morphine after all those surgeries.
Yeah,
that she
probably
had. So this suit didn't go anywhere. She dropped the suit and she ended up leaving Los Angeles and got back on the vaudeville circuit. The remaining years of her life would be filled with legal troubles, alcoholism, and hospital stays before she died of an overdose in 1948.
Oh my God.
So it was a very sad, very sad story. By 1935, Mannix was not only a powerful man in Hollywood, but he had forged strong relationships in law enforcement, government, and the underworld. After Billy Wilkerson founded The Hollywood Reporter in 1930, Louis B. Mayer tried to get it shut down. Wilkerson's wife, Edith Gwynne, was the head writer, and she was spilling all kinds of tea in The Hollywood Reporter. And Mayer was like, I can't have this.
Yeah.
This rag is going to ruin us. Mayer's attempt to shut down The Hollywood Reporter was unsuccessful, and he was like, if you can't beat him, join him.
Yeah.
So Howard Strickling would cozy up to Billy Wilkerson, and they became very good friends. Mm. Great relationship to have if you're in publicity.
And bad relationship to have if you're supposedly a journalist.
Right. Yeah, this was not like hard-hitting journalism.
No.
What was it, a year ago when you did your episode on Billy Haynes?
It might have been longer than that.
Might have been longer than that. Yeah. But we did do an episode about gay actor Billy Haynes. It's really interesting. That's right. Does he research that? He was a known gay man in Hollywood. And MGM needed to ensure that stories about him would be kept under control.
Right.
Like, he was known to be...
He was pretty much out.
He was pretty much out, but it wasn't, like, explicitly said. It wasn't said in the trades.
No, they kind of kept it under wraps. But he, like, lived with a man. Like, he had open relationships.
Correct.
Yeah.
So when Haynes was found at a gay brothel with Ramon Navarro or picked up in a vice raid, Mannix and Strickling, they would cover that up. But as we discussed in our Billy Haynes episode, he didn't want to hide his sexuality.
Yeah.
I mean, this was like very uncommon in this time.
Ramon was more closeted.
Yes.
Yeah.
Other magazines that weren't The Hollywood Reporter, they would regularly, like, not so subtly hint
right
at his sexual identity by using all sorts of like euphemisms.
Yeah.
And MGM at one point had attempted to force him into a lavender marriage with everyone from Joan Crawford to Barbara Lamar, but Haynes was like, no.
Right.
I have a boyfriend.
I remember being shocked by it when I researched the episode, because like you said, it was so rare back then to be so out like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the 1930s, Billy Haynes' star had fallen and Mayer wanted him gone. Irving Thalberg refused to let Haynes go, though. He wanted him at MGM. So Mayer was like, fine, but then he cut his salary in half.
Yeah, I think that Billy was really friends with a lot of big actresses. And I bet you Irving's wife, what's her name? Norma Talmadge?
Yes.
I think that she, I bet you she had something to do with that, you know? Because he was down with all the big female stars.
Of course.
Yeah.
And Irving Thalberg was definitely the more reasonable of the two in terms of like Mayer and Thalberg.
Oh, you don't hear bad stories about Irving Thalberg.
No, everybody liked him a lot, yeah. But everyone knew that Louis B. Mayer was a fucking dick.
Oh, totally.
Lupe Velez, she met Johnny Weissmuller around 1932. At this time, Weissmuller was starring as Tarzan in MGM's film series.
Yeah.
This is an early Tarzan.
I didn't watch Tarzan.
I didn't watch Tarzan either. Was there like reruns of like on Nick at Night of Tarzan?
I don't think so. I think that was too old even for Nick at Night because it's like really old.
Because didn't they have like a TV series?
Maybe.
At some point, they
it
just,
sounds fake. I mean, I feel like I've seen some
like
kind
a
of
black
version,
and white.
Yeah, of Tarzan, but I don't know who was in it.
I feel like at some point they just stopped making Tarzan movies.
It was too. People were like, we don't give a shit about that topic anymore. We want divorced families.
Yeah, we don't care that this kid was raised in the jungle by animals.
I just feel like in the 70s, people weren't that into like fantasy or like whatever. I don't know if that's fantasy, but
that's
it's
not
kinda,
fantasy. It's like kind of something adventure. Though,
action adventure fantasy, like that kind of stuff. It became more realistic. The TV shows. It was like divorced parents getting married. Yeah. Single dads.
Yeah, people addicted to pills.
Families. We wanted to see real things.
Murders.
Yeah. Murder, sure.
Like slashers.
Absolutely. But yeah, I think.
But
I
then in the 80s, we're like, we're ready for fantasy again.
Yeah.
We're doing the Neverending Story. We're doing the Dark Crystal.
I feel like it goes back and forth. But
yeah.
I guess there was some stuff in the 70s. What was that show, Land of the Lost?
Yeah, we can't forget Land of the Lost. I thought that was 60s. No, it was 70s.
It was 70s, for sure. But that was like H.R. Puffin stuff type. What was that?
Okay, we're Sid way Croft. Off. Okay, we're okay, way go. Off. Okay, Tarzan is its own thing. People were just over Tarzan.
I think there was a ton of Tarzan.
I just feel like every generation or every 5 years, they had a new Tarzan. And then finally, Hollywood was like, enough.
But I think back then with Johnny Weissmuller, there was like, it was like a movie every 3 months.
Yes. Like this was a series.
They were like spitting them out.
No, this was like the Jason Bourne of its day.
Yeah. But even more because it was like cheap and fast. Like,
well, yeah, it was like, what's that guy, Jason Statham?
Yeah.
How he always has like a new action movie.
But I think also back then, weren't there like short things before movies, like short films that they would put, yes, like serial kind of things? I think that's what this was.
But I was looking at Johnny Weissmuller's, or Weissmuller, however you say his name. I was looking at his filmography and it was like every year there was a new Tarzan movie.
He had a good
for
gig.
Like 8 years.
He was rolling in it.
He was rolling in it. And then like in the late 90s, they tried to trick us. They were like, oh, wait, we did have the Tarzan Disney movie.
And wasn't there one with
Brendan Fraser? It was George of the Jungle.
Okay, sorry.
That's what I mean. They tried to trick us. But we all know that's Tarzan, right?
Well, George of the Jungle was a cartoon.
But how's that different than Tarzan?
I don't know. Wasn't there also Kid in the City?
What?
There was some movie with a little...
Jungle to Jungle.
Jungle to Jungle.
It was Jungle to Jungle starring Martin Short as Lily Sobieski's father. And I forget the kid's name, but he was like in a few things.
He was like a little child actor for a bit.
He had like a child teen actor.
And he was like a guy.
Amazonian. He was an Amazonian. Except he was... Okay, his mom was a white woman. I think the father was a white man, but because the mom was like a cultural, some kind of anthropologist or archaeologist, she like lived in the Amazonian jungle. And so the kid also lived in the Amazonian jungle.
But for some reason, he became feral.
Yeah, he was like a feral. It made no sense. It made no fucking sense. And then like he comes to New York City because it's time for him to be a man. This is like his, like, you're a man now. You're turning 13.
You can't eat shit.
They're like, you need to prove your manliness. You're going to go to New York City. And he gets there. He's completely unsupervised. He's like trying to hail a cab and he's like running in between traffic. And like, he's like almost getting himself fucking killed. A scene I'll never forget is where he sees cat food on the ground and he starts eating it.
He's the worst parent. We should recap this movie.
Wait, wasn't Tim Allen in it too?
I feel like I never saw this movie, but the ads for it were so everywhere that I feel like I know the movie.
Tim Allen was his dad, his bio dad.
Oh.
Tim Allen was his bio dad and Martin Short was Lily Sobieski's father, who was absolutely disgusted by this kid. Like, he was disgusted by him.
Lily Sobieski.
Loved her. Loved her.
She had a moment.
She had such a good moment. She's an artist now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where were we? Johnny Weissmuller.
We got to recap Jungle to Jungle.
That's a great recap. Because I'm already obsessed.
Dude, it's so bad. Anyway, Johnny Weissmuller, he hooked up with Lupe Velez in 1932. And he's Tarzan, so you know he's buff.
Yeah.
And he was. He was like a water polo player or something, or a swimmer.
That's like back in the day where you were like an athlete and then you could become a movie star just because you were like so many muscles.
Yeah.
And you're just hot.
No, there were like Mickey Hargitay.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I know all about this relationship and story from Hollywood Babylon.
We got to do an episode on Lupe Velez where we debunk the Hollywood Babylon story because she had a wild life in her own right.
Right. But yeah, this relationship was very tumultuous.
Oh yeah, this was a wild relationship. So this affair, it began passionate, but there was one problem. He was married to Bobby Arnst.
Not Bobby Arnst. No.
Look, I don't know what Bobby Arnst looks like, but Lupe Velez sounds hotter, and she's very attractive.
It's for sure a hotter name.
It's a way hotter name than Bobby Arnst.
I'd be like, if my husband was cheating with Lupe Velez, I would be like, shit.
It's I'm over. Screwed. It's over.
I'm screwed. I can't compete with that.
You can't compete with Lupe Velez. So Howard Strickling urged Weissmuller to divorce his wife if he's going to date Lupe Velez. Because he got it. He's like, you can't go back.
Come on.
You can't come back from that.
Yeah.
So just get divorced from your wife because MGM can't have like an out cheater or like a known cheater.
They can't condone that.
They can't condone it. They what is publicly.
This? Amy Robach and
and Billy Campbell with Andrew Hsu.
With her new boyfriend.
Dude. So by the summer of 1932, the press had announced that Weissmuller and Arnst were breaking up after less than 2 years of marriage. Howard Strickling paid Bobby Arnst $10,000 for her cooperation in divorcing their star.
Wow.
Lupe Velez married Johnny Weissmuller the following year in October 1933. The marriage between Velez and Weissmuller was a mess. Velez was also a wild woman. She reportedly got into a brawl with fellow wild woman Lillian Tashman in the bathroom at the Monte Marte Cafe in Hollywood.
Wow. I want to go there.
I do too. That is a serious fight. If you can't wait to leave the restaurant, you got to do it in the bathroom.
Yeah. You know some little comment happened.
It was a comment. Yeah. They were saying rude shit to each other, and that's then, how it started.
And then someone fucking lost it and shoved the other one or something.
Yeah, Lillian, I don't know exactly what they said. I think Lupe Velez said, like, you're a lesbian, because she was.
Right.
I'm sure Lillian said some nasty things. Mm. And then they just started like having a really hot cat fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Really
fucking
hot.
Each other. Fucking each other up.
They were punching each other and then all of a sudden they started kissing.
So according to Michelle Vogel's book, Lupe Velez, The Life and Career of Hollywood's Mexican Spitfire, this is what she said. One time while Lupe was dining at the Embassy Club, she spotted Lillian Tashman from across the room. Lillian was wearing long white gloves, so Lupe proceeded to wrap napkins around her arms and make fun of her for all to see.
Wow. How did she ever recover from that burn?
People snickered at Lupe's impromptu show, but Lillian wasn't laughing. On that occasion, both ladies were restrained before a physical altercation could happen. Not at the Embassy Club. But sarcastic, bitchy remarks flew back and forth between Lupe and Lillian for ages. Then came the culmination of years of pent-up frustration, and the feisty pair came to blows on the powder room floor of the Monte Marte Cafe in Hollywood. They clawed, punched, and kicked each other, and by all accounts, Lupe won.
They scissored.
MGM had their hands full with Lupe Velez during the short time she was married to their star. Howard Strickling apparently had to pay off photographers to get rid of hundreds of photographs that had been taken of her where you could clearly see her pussy.
I love it.
So these are like old school upskirt photos.
Have you ever seen the ones of Carmen Miranda?
What?
There's like famous pictures of her because she didn't wear underwear when she like has the fruit on her head and someone's like twirling her. And yeah. You know when they like pick them up and spin them and their legs open?
Yes.
In the air when they're dancing, her legs open and you could see her big black bush.
No, I think that's what happened to Lupe Velez too, because she would like be dancing at parties and like going off.
Yeah.
She didn't care if her skirt was flying up.
Oh no. They're calm as can be.
Lupe and Johnny, they divorced in 1934, just 10 months after of marriage.
But that was when showing your pussy meant something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was a big deal it was to flash your bush.
Yeah.
Like you showed your pussy.
It was unheard of.
That is like a top tier woman. Nowadays, everyone shows it. Who gives a
shit?
We've seen
a lot of pussies.
Yeah. But that back then, that was like rare. That was like a pearl clutcher.
Yeah.
If a woman showed her bush getting out of a car.
Yeah.
Her pussy wide open.
That's an advanced move.
It's like unheard of.
It's totally unheard of. Speaking of Bush, as for Lillian Tashman, she was among the lesbian and bisexual women that made up Hollywood's sewing circle. She had a years-long on-again, off-again affair with MGM star Greta Garbo.
Ooh.
Tashman, a lesbian, was in a lavender marriage with actor Edmund Lowe, who was a gay man. The press often remarked just how perfect their relationship was and how they were the best dressed in Hollywood.
Wow.
But behind the scenes, Tashman was pegging Garbo. I mean, I don't know if literally, but I just assume Tashman was the top.
She seems like a strap-on girl.
I think Tashman was topping Greta Garbo.
Well, because that's why she got so mad at Lupe. She had some extra, like, anger going. She wanted to get on it. Right?
Lillian Tashman's also going on the list because this broad fucked a lot of people. Dude, she also had a crazy life and she was like very brash.
Okay. I love it.
And rude.
Nice. I like bitches who cause trouble.
She caused a lot of trouble and Strickling had to like cover for these two women. He would like go around to the press. He's like, they're just very close friends.
Her and Garbo?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's causing a lot of trouble for someone who is not a big star.
Garbo.
No, Lillian, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
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 Do you know what I mean?
So during an off period of their relationship, Garbo began seeing French Canadian actress Fifi Dorsey. When a gossip magazine began reporting on her new best friend, Mayer was pissed. Yeah. So they're like, he's like, what's, you got a new best lady friend? We all know what that means.
Yeah, come on.
When you get a new best gal.
Yeah.
They're not subtle. So he's really mad. So Eddie Mannix told Greta Garbo that her new girlfriend, Fifi, has gone to the press and is like talking about how you guys are all close.
Yeah.
She didn't say like we're lovers, but she was like, yeah, I'm best friends with, she's right. my best girl.
Why bring it up at all?
Yeah. So Fifi was like strong-armed by MGM to retract her statements in the press that she made.
Well, that looks even more suspicious.
In a 1930 headline for the Los Angeles Post Record, the headline said this, pretty Fifi Dorsey is, quote, an actress or crazy?
Oh, my God.
They were really mean to this woman.
That's so mean.
This was an interview they did, but they re-transcribed all of her answers to be, like, phonetically French. Like, they wrote it out like, my name is Fifi.
Gigi Fifi.
Yeah, like, I am not friends with Zigretta Garbo.
Oh, my God.
And they picked, like, the most deranged picture of her. To be fair, this woman does look really irritating.
Just also, like, you can be an actress and crazy. Why choose?
So Fifi had to deny because she was, of course, asked about her best friend, Greta Garbo, in the paper. And she was like, no, we've honestly only hung out 4 times.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
Garbo and Dorsey then broke up because Garbo was like, I don't want to date someone who's going to the press about us.
No, I do agree. She does sound very irritating.
She thought she was like a try hard.
Yeah.
Probably.
She sounds like a try. I mean, her name's Fifi. That's a try hard name.
Well, she yeah. And I think she changed it to Fifi.
Yeah.
I don't think that's ever anyone's real name.
It's like the fucking bird from the tiki room, the enchanted tiki room at Disneyland.
Wait, is one of them named Fifi?
Yeah. It's like Fifi, Suzette. The French parrots.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or not parrots. They're like the white birds, cockatoo, or cockatoos. I don't know what they are. They all have French names.
So Garbo, like, was not going to stop being a lesbian just because she broke up with Fifi, much to the studio's chagrin.
She can get whatever she wants.
Yeah, it's Greta Garbo.
Yeah. She's not, yeah.
Her next romance was with Mercedes DaCosta, playwright and author.
Ooh.
Now, you might remember Mercedes DaCosta from our episode on Alla Nazimova.
Right.
Because this woman fucked everyone.
Wow.
She fucked Alla. She fucked Marlena Dietrich. She fucked Tallulah Bankhead. She fucked Joan Crawford. She was the Wilmer Valderrama of old Hollywood lesbians.
She got every hot lesbian of the day.
She wasn't even that hot, but she got all of them.
Wow. But just like Wilmer.
That's what I'm saying.
She's not that hot.
She's the Wilmer Valderrama of her day.
Yeah.
Where you can't figure out, like, what is it about this girl?
What has she got?
What does she have that we don't know about?
See, I buy it more with her than Wilmer, though.
Yeah.
Like, that you, like, because a woman, you know, she must know what she's doing.
She must know what she's doing.
Yeah. So
she just, like, had it. She had all these women. So Mercedes and Greta Garbo, they were making appearances themselves in the press because they're like, oh, Garbo's new best friend.
Right.
And in December of 1931, the San Francisco Examiner reported that the pair were spotted together at Tam O'Shanter's in Los Angeles.
Oh, my God.
How old is this restaurant, Desi?
I mean, old enough for that.
It's at least from the 30s.
I'm so excited. I've been there now.
What did they order?
They must have got some rare beef.
I bet they did get rare beef.
Yeah.
And Clams Casino.
Yeah. It's such a fun. We got to go. I love it.
I really want to go. They were described as great friends. 2 weeks later, the same paper said of Garbo and Acosta, quote, the two girls are inseparable companions.
Yeah. Besties.
While the Garbo-DaCosta relationship continued for years, Tallulah Bankhead became infatuated with Garbo and pursued her relentlessly.
Ooh.
MGM was like, absolutely not. We're not we'll let Garbo scissor all over town, but we're not letting Tallulah Bankhead get her claws in.
Can't get two rumored lesbians hanging out. There's only so much lying you could do.
When Will Hayes released his Doom book right before the Hayes Code came into effect, these were the list of actors deemed too immoral to book, and Tallulah Bankhead was put in the number one spot.
What an honor.
I know we talked about this in our Tallulah Bankhead episode that we did years and years ago. It might even just be a Patreon episode.
I think it's a Patreon, but we may have posted it on Maine. It's a short episode.
We need to do like a full length episode.
Yeah, this is just a short episode on her with some of her funnier stories, I think.
I think we just even did her quotes.
It's a very short episode.
It's like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
We definitely need a good in-depth episode on her for sure.
Yeah.
I love her.
I love her so much. But by 1934, the Hays Code came into effect, and this was a really dark time.
Yes.
So Will Hayes was the then president of the Motion Picture Producers and Distributors of America, and he basically decided what was acceptable to be shown on screen. Hayes was a very conservative Christian man, and he didn't want any more naughtiness on film.
No.
Made him too horny.
We discussed this in one episode. I mean, probably a few episodes, but I definitely remember. I think it was something I did. I can't remember what. Well, we learned a little bit more about it because it's crazy how it all started.
Yeah.
And now this man just kind of got this power.
No, he's like not even like into movies.
No.
He doesn't even care. He just got this job.
Yeah, I think something happened that set everything off.
There was also like a Catholic committee.
Yes.
Like an official Catholic thing that they stepped in.
And it's kind of wild that that all started just the rating system to begin with, which is also very corrupt.
Right. So Tallulah Bankhead was not afraid of Will Hayes. She called him a little prick, among other things.
Oh, I bet.
Anyway, this is a good place to take a break. We'll be right back.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So just to wrap up the Garbo-Mercedes D'Acosta relationship, Louis B. Mayer was panicked after he kept seeing stories about them hanging out together in the press. Not only that, but he didn't like that Mercedes D'Acosta appeared to be acting like Greta Garbo's manager because she was like helping her make career advice.
Oh.
Like giving her career advice and helping her make career decisions. And obviously MGM didn't like that. So they made a really bold choice. MGM decided to hire Mercedes to write something for Garbo.
Ooh.
And Mercedes D'Acosta was like, okay, I want her to play a man in her next movie, and I want her to be in drag.
Ooh.
And Irving Thalberg reportedly said, are you out of your fucking mind?
You got him riled up.
You even got Thalberg riled up. Even he knew that was a bridge too far.
Yeah, come on.
We're trying to dispel the lesbian rumors.
Right.
We're not putting her in drag.
No.
She can wear her trousers. But that's it.
Yeah.
Another messy relationship MGM had to contend with was that of Clark Gable and Joan Crawford. In 1931, Gable had recently signed with MGM, and he was a fast-rising star. He had climbed his way to success by fucking a series of women who would bolster his career. When Gable was 23, he married his 40-year-old acting coach and manager, Josephine Dillon. Gable, a well-known womanizer, hit on one of their wedding guests at their wedding.
Wow.
Clark Gable was brazen. And he kind of sounds like a prick, to be honest.
And he's not that hot to me.
Okay, I was going to say the same thing.
Like, I don't get it.
I was, like, looking at pictures of him today. I'm like, he's really, like, he's doing a lot when he isn't, like, hot enough to me.
And he's got, like, really big ears.
Well, that was, MGM did have a problem with that.
That's, like, his famous character. Like, you know that place, like, what is it, Jason's?
Yeah.
Where they have the characters of all the celebrities on the wall.
Yeah.
And his was really big ears.
No, I always never liked getting those, like, things on like the boardwalk where you get like a carriage done because God forbid they like, I'm like, my nose looks like that. You know, when they just like take a feature that you already are self-conscious about.
Oh, they should be put in prison. Those
I agree.
It's so mean.
They're mean to like the most beautiful people too.
No, it doesn't matter. It's not like a personal thing. They'll just find something even when it's not accurate.
No.
And make it, do you know what I mean? Like
They exaggerate a little too much.
No, it's so crazy.
But that is correct.
But no, I have never gotten his appeal. Even as an actor, I'm not like a fan of his, really.
He was like friends with John Wayne.
He's just like a certain type of actor that was very popular that I just don't care for.
Yeah.
You know?
We're not Gable heads.
No, I do not stan him. I don't stand Clark.
So he was a womanizer, and during the marriage, he toured with a theater company and slept with actress and playwright Jane Cowell the entire time. Now, he did this because she helped him get more roles.
Wow. Wow.
Following the tour, he started sleeping with another older woman, 43-year-old actress Pauline Frederick. Pauline was established and had money, and she showered Gable with lavish gifts during their 2-year affair. She even paid to have his teeth fixed.
Damn.
I saw a picture of him before his teeth were fixed.
Whoa.
Looked like a radically different man.
Damn.
Meanwhile, Clark Gable's wife, Josephine, is just like hanging around.
Yeah, her husband's fucking everything.
He's on tour.
He's busy.
He's really busy. He's not even fucking for the fun of it. He's fucking for the career of it.
No, it's a full-time job.
This is how he got famous.
I mean, good for him.
He did.
He worked around those teeth. He got some teeth. He needed to get some stuff done.
He was a hustler.
Yeah.
By 1928, he had a few bit parts and films under his belt, but he was still doing theater. Gable was hired at the Laskin Brothers Stock Company in Houston, where he became their most popular actor. One of his many fans was 45-year-old wealthy divorcee Maria Langham.
Damn, these old bitches are getting up on him.
That's who likes Clark Gable. They're like, Gable.
We got some money. My husband died. I'm going to get a young piece. I love these old women doing this.
These old broads are fucking this up-and-coming young actor.
I mean, first of all, they're like in their 40s, but that was like ancient back then. That was like their golden years.
Oh, totally. So despite the fact that Clark Gable had both a wife and a wealthy girlfriend, that didn't stop him from having additional side chicks.
He needed to really move up. He needed more.
No, it's like he saw an opportunity like, oh, this woman has even more money. I gotta fuck this lady.
I mean, he could have been like one of those dudes that kills all these women. We've talked about those guys.
We've done shows
about guys like that. Luckily, he was just trying to be an actor.
Yeah. So he like anywhere that this guy saw an opportunity to further his career, he took it and he fucked it.
To be honest, I'm way more interested in him now.
I know. I was like, do we need to do a Clark Gable episode? Because this is really only scratching the surface.
I think this is interesting because I had no idea.
It is. I mean, we hear this all the time about like women. It's such a cliche. Oh, women sleeping their way to the top. That's like such a trope. But it's always so interesting when you hear of a man doing it.
Yeah.
Especially one as famous as Clark Gable.
And he's not even doing it with like big time Hollywood stars yet.
No,
he's just doing it with women on the tour.
No, this lady, Maria Langham, she's like from Texas.
That's what's interesting.
She just had a little bit of money.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, that'll help me. You know, all my meals will be paid for the rest of the tour.
Yeah,
or whatever.
He's thinking short term.
He's short term fucking. He's not like, I'm going to fuck.
Yeah.
Louis B. Mayer's wife.
Yes.
I'm starting from the bottom.
No, he's working his way up.
He did eventually separate from his wife, Josephine, in 1929. And then he got married to Maria Langham, the Texas woman, the following year. Langham personally financed his next theater production. Like she produced this play for him.
That's marriage material. That's why he married her. That she had play producing money.
She had play producing money, and Gable was the star. It was called The Last Mile. But it wasn't just women that Clark Gable got involved with. In 1925, he had a brief sexual relationship with Billy Haynes.
Ooh.
He saw that Billy Haynes was like a popular film actor.
Right.
And so they were reportedly seen having sex at a party at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel.
Whoa.
That's also an advanced move.
That is super advanced.
Because how many gay encounters has Clark Gable had? He seems very heterosexual to me.
And then to do it publicly?
Yeah. He's brazen.
That's hot.
So when
he's getting hotter to me.
So when MGM signed Gable in 1931, they knew that he would fuck just about anyone to get ahead. Like everyone knew this was like common knowledge now in the film industry. Like, oh, this guy's a big slut.
I love it. See, he had some swag that I'm missing. when I'm watching him. You know what I mean? Like, no, now I'm seeing it.
He's like so stiff to me.
I know, but it's like he has this side where I'm like, okay, that's why he got famous. Because like I said last episode, people are attracted to slut energy. They want to be around it.
They want to be around it. It's fun. It's exciting.
Yeah.
So Myrna Loy said this of Clark Gable. He was always on the make at the studio after everyone. And an unnamed colleague of Gable called him, quote, the least selective lover in the hemisphere. He'll screw anything.
I love it. But he'll make you feel special.
He'll make you feel so special and he'll screw anything.
Oh my God, that's a skill.
When Clark Gable and Joan Crawford began having an affair, MGM was like, oh shit.
That's like a fucking atomic bomb going off.
Yeah. These are two of the biggest stars at MGM at the time. And so the studio's like, we got to keep an eye on this. And also, this affair began while he was still married to Maria Langham.
I mean.
And while Crawford was still married to Douglas Fairbanks Jr. Yeah,
they don't care.
I mean, Douglas Fairbanks Jr. didn't give a shit, but.
I meant Joan and Clark don't care.
Oh, they really don't care.
Yeah.
Roger St. John, the writer, she said that this was, quote, the affair that almost burned Hollywood down.
Ooh.
When Maria Langham was like furious.
Yeah.
She was mad about this affair. She's like, hey, I can't compete with Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
So she marched over to Howard Strickling and revealed that she wasn't even legally married to Clark Gable because his divorce with Josephine hadn't even been finalized.
Uh-oh.
And she's like, I'm going to go to the press with this juicy information. If you, Howard Strickling and MGM, don't personally force Clark Gable to marry me.
Wait, so they're not married yet?
They're not even...
Oh, officially.
They're not legally married.
Got it.
Because he's still technically married to his first wife.
So she wants them to get the divorce done and then have Clark marry her again, legally.
For real, this time.
I don't know about it.
I mean, that's very unromantic if you have to have your studio...
Yeah.
The studio force someone to marry you.
It can't feel good.
It can't feel good because the whole time you're walking, you're like, MGM made him do this.
Yeah. You can't.
This isn't real love.
And you know, for Clark, he's like, well, technically we're not married. Like, he liked that little loophole.
He probably said that to Joan. Yeah. He's like, come on. We all know.
Technically, I'm cheating on Louise.
Josephine.
Oh, Josephine, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, and Dougie, you know, yeah. I know He'll who Dougie's fine. Screwing.
He's getting spanked.
I bet he calls him Dougie.
Doogie.
Doogie Fairbanks Jr. I'm going to write that show.
That's the one I want to see.
Doogie Fairbanks Jr. is Doogie Howser if it was set in the 1920s.
In the world of acting. He's the youngest producer on The Lot.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's the youngest.
He's the boy wonder.
He's the boy wonder producer. And he, yeah. But he's also an asshole, just like Louis B. Mayer.
Yeah.
But he's like 12.
Oh, my God. That's so good.
Don't copyright. This is me and Desi's idea. Don't take it.
Yeah, please.
Doogie Fairbanks Jr.
We could pitch it.
But we
imagine going into a pitch meeting with that. Trust me. It doesn't sound like anyone's going to be interested, but they will.
Where was I? Oh, yeah. Clark Gable and Joan Crawford are having sex and having an affair. And Maria Langham is throwing a big temper tantrum about that her husband or fake husband's cheating on her. And so the studio cared more about like the negative publicity with their star. So they agreed. They're like, all right, we'll make Clark Gable get a divorce. And that June, after his divorce from Josephine Dillon was finalized, he legally married Maria Langham at a Hollywood courthouse. So he actually did marry this woman.
I mean, because he doesn't give a shit if he's married. It doesn't mean anything to him.
Yeah.
Let's get off his back.
Then the studio said, well, and you guys need to move out of your like little, you know, separate little duplex apartment you guys share together.
Oh.
And you need to move into an actual house together.
Yeah.
And you're going to move there. And at the same time, Joan Crawford became pregnant.
Uh-oh.
Now, whether it was Clark Gable's is unknown, but MGM did pay for her abortion. Joan Crawford and Clark Gable continued the affair. But Clark Gable's ex, Josephine, like the OG wife,
yeah,
she wasn't going to leave this mess without herself getting a little something.
Ooh, I love it.
So she went to MGM. She's like, hey, you need to pay me for your silence.
I'm faint. I would love to work in this office. Every day, all these people coming in. It's the dream job for a tea lover. You're just like, again? The other wife's here now. Like, it must be so good. Like, the secretary.
Oh, my God. Ugh, it's incredible.
She's losing it.
So, MGM agreed. They made Clark Gable pay her $200 of his monthly salary for the rest of his contract.
Whoa.
That's a lot of money in 1931.
Also for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she earned it, though.
I do, too.
Because she put up with a lot while he was fucking everyone on tour. And she was like his OG acting coach.
She liked him before he was famous.
She liked him when he had the weird teeth.
Yeah. Is she the one who fixed his teeth or no? The Texas woman did.
The Texas. Oh. No. Different woman.
Oh, God.
It was a total Pauline, a woman in between. They never got married.
Okay. So she loved him with his bad teeth.
Yeah. She didn't even pressure him to fix his teeth.
She loved him the way he was.
But Crawford and Gable were not always subtle. In fact, they got caught groping each other at the Coconut Grove.
Mm.
More like the Gropenut
Grove. The Gropenut Grove. I like that they weren't subtle. It's like, really?
Yeah.
No shit.
They were not. They literally hid behind the bandstand.
Oh my God.
Thinking that they wouldn't get caught.
That's so horny. I mean, he fucking Billy Haynes at a hotel. He's definitely groping Joan Crawford at the Coconut Grove. Like,
yeah.
That's happening.
It's happening.
This guy's horny as hell. I can't believe it.
He's so horny.
Damn.
When Louis B. Mayer found out about this incident, he was furious, and he called both of them into his office for a meeting.
After he jerked off to
it. He was like, you guys are not allowed to hang out anymore, and you're not making any more movies together. And Joan was like, how dare you? Ooh. She was fucking livid.
But, she how dared him.
But Louis B. Mayer was like, I will fire both of you. And that shut her up. Then Louis B. Mayer made Joan Crawford go on a second honeymoon with Douglas Fairbanks Jr.
Ugh.
And it was like a highly publicized event.
Yeah, that sucks.
Where all the papers were like, Joan Crawford and Douglas Fairbanks Jr. are heading off on a six-week vacation in Europe.
Yeah, and she's miserable.
She's just horny for Clark Gable the whole time.
Imagine, that's so mean. She got grounded.
The Los Angeles Times reported on their trip in 1932. Joan Crawford and Douglas Fairbanks Jr. are on another honeymoon trip. Seems like it's about the third or fourth. It's wonderful when people can just keep up that honeymoon air after being married for 3 years.
Oh, they're just so in love.
This is shady.
Yeah.
This is a shady blurb from the LA Times.
Yeah.
Wow, another honeymoon?
They're not on the payroll yet. The MGM payroll.
No. Mayer then made Clark Gable and Maria do their own press tour. They didn't get to go to Europe, though.
They're not honeymooning.
He just made them travel around the country with her three kids.
That's not romantic.
Like, probably by train.
I didn't know she had kids.
Yeah, she had three kids.
Oh, damn. Oh, sorry.
It was like, yeah, it was not fun. But Clark Gable continued to fuck around.
Even on the honeymoon.
Their like honeymoon USA road trip.
She's like with the kids, and he's like, I'll be right back, sweetheart. Find some old broad at the diner.
Yeah.
Banger.
Yeah.
The parking lot. You could do it.
He then began an affair with Marion Davies.
Oh.
This is like the first younger woman.
Another horny girl.
But she's very horny.
She's so horny.
You know what? I bet they bonded over fucking old people.
Yeah. She's like, me too.
Because her boyfriend at the time was her long-term partner, William Randolph Hearst.
And he's the oldest ever. He's super old.
No, he's like 60 at this point.
But he looks like 80, like 100.
No, he was he's someone hideous. Who's always looked 100.
He's a hideous man.
He's a beast.
Yeah.
So they start fucking. And they actually did a movie together called Polly at the Circus. And the reason that Clark Gable was cast in Polly at the Circus is because it was such a shitty movie that, like, Mayer just needed some way to punish him. So he's like, I'm casting you in Polly at the Circus.
Yeah.
And then he was like, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to fuck Marion Davies on set.
He didn't care. More access to that pussy.
Howard Strickling caught on to his affair with Marion Davies really quickly. As did Marion's long-term boyfriend, William Randolph Hearst. But Hearst did not really care. He, like, couldn't have sex anymore.
No. They kind of give up when they couldn't get boners. So, like, fine.
Yeah, this is before Viagra.
Yeah. So he let her have some D.
He was over it. But MGM obviously cared. And William Randolph Hearst did help Clark Gable get more money during his contract renewal.
That's nice.
Probably he's like, you were so kind to my girlfriend.
He put a right smile on her face.
And that is where we will leave off this week.
Aw.
I know. I got more stories coming.
Okay.
We got the 40.
I'm like so excited about Clark Gable now. We got to do an episode on him. I need more.
I need to know his entire love life.
I need to know, like, everything about him, and I never felt that way before.
Why was he always so boring before to me?
Because I didn't know anything about him. I just knew he was married to Carol Lombard and, like, devastated after she died.
Yes.
So she must have a diamond-level pussy if she tied him down. I mean, he probably cheated on her, but he was probably the most... He probably loved her.
He probably cheated the least on her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's sad.
That's so sad. That's why I cheated the least on her. She was the love of my life. No, that's all I really knew about him. And I knew that he, like, died on the set of Giant.
Yeah.
With Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
So I don't really know much about him.
I don't either.
But he's just in movies I don't typically like.
I think I just always prejudged him because I'm like, he's kind of boring.
Right. Because I don't watch movies that he was in. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've seen, like, Gone with the Wind. I've seen Giant, but I don't really know any of his other movies. And it's not like I love those movies.
Maybe he just wasn't flamboyant enough for me.
He is very straight.
He's just, like, very butch.
Yeah, he's, like, very, he takes a lot of masculine roles, like, standard sort of, like, whatever.
I need someone with, like, a little more flamboyant.
But it seems like in his real life, he was a little bit much.
He'd fuck anyone.
But that sounds like he must have been a fun person.
Maybe he was very serious about the fucking.
But if that many women are fucking you, and guys too, you gotta have something.
I wonder if he fucked any other guys other than Billy Haynes.
Because he wasn't that hot. There must have been a personality thing happening.
And Billy Haynes was hot.
Billy Haynes was hot, and I feel like Billy Haynes liked having fun. So Clark Gable must have been fun.
Right.
Because he wasn't, like, hot. Like, Billy Haynes could get hotter, for sure.
That must have been a story he told for years at parties. Like, can you believe I fucked Clark Gable at the Beverly Wilshire during, like, Bruce's party?
Yeah.
Or whatever.
No. I need to know. I would love to hear Billy Haynes' version of what happened. But I didn't even know he had sex with Billy Haynes or whatever.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
People saw him. Many people are saying.
I believe what I want to believe. If it's good enough, I want to believe it.
It was apparently various sexual positions.
I've heard that about Clark Gable, that he was bisexual, but almost every old Hollywood star has rumors that they're bisexual or gay or have had affairs. So that's believable too. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah.
That there were a lot of queer actors that were, like, closeted or open.
This is also makes me sad because this is back in the day when Los Angeles had like actual like lesbian bars and stuff. And we just don't have that anymore.
I would love to have gone to some of those old lesbian actor parties, you know, back in the day. They sound fucking fun.
I know.
I'd be scared.
You'd be scared?
You'd go and like hang out with Marlena Dietrich.
She'd try and turn
Greta
you.
Garbo. They're like intense energy.
They'd be like, hey. They'd be like, hello, little redhead. They'd make some like strawberry comments to you.
They're just an intimidating energy.
They're so intimidating.
Do you know what I mean? It's not necessarily because they're lesbians, but.
No, but they're just very hot.
They're hot.
They're very
hot. But they're
hot.
Also very intense.
Yeah.
Like they're famously intense.
Yeah.
So. I mean, but yeah, they wouldn't like my little jokes.
You know what? You could get on with Tallulah.
Tallulah, I could probably get away with, but you'd have to live in fear she was going to drag your ass if you got
right,
out of line.
One false move.
I don't want her being mean to me.
You don't want to be on Tallulah Bankhead's bad side.
No, I'm pretty good about not getting on bad sides.
Yeah, me neither.
I'd be quiet. I wouldn't make a fool of myself.
Yeah.
I just sit there and smoke my cigar.
Well, I can't wait for part three.
Me too. I love an old Hollywood story.
Me too. We got some more down the pipe.
We got a lot coming.
We got some good ones coming.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see you next week, but we'll be back very soon for the mini episode. Bye.
Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.